Imagine being raised in a home where comedy legends casually dropped by for dinner, where every family gathering turned into an impromptu stand-up show, and where laughter wasn't just encouraged, it was the family business. For Marlo Thomas, daughter of comedy pioneer Danny Thomas, this wasn't imagination, but everyday reality. The Thomas household transformed regularly into an informal comedy classroom, with masters of the craft like Milton Berle, George Burns, and John Murray stopping by to trade stories and perfect punchlines. These weren't just funny people passing through. They were craftsmen honing their art, each with distinct approaches to making people laugh. John Murray could reduce Danny Thomas to helpless laughter with a simple anecdote about chasing Frank Sinatra for an autograph. George Burns displayed remarkable humility, attributing his own witty remarks to others when retelling them. Joey Bishop, considered the quickest wit, once got Sammy Davis Jr. out of a speeding ticket by telling the officer, "The man has one eye. Do you want him to look at the road or at the speedometer?" Hillcrest Country Club, a Jews-only establishment, became comedy's educational hub, where Lebanese Catholic Donnie Thomas was made an honorary member. Groucho Marx quipped, "I don't mind making a non-Jew an honorary member, but couldn't we at least pick a guy who doesn't look Jewish?" These gatherings created an informal apprenticeship for young Marlo, who absorbed timing, storytelling, and comedic fearlessness. Danny helped Harry Gelbart's son Larry, later MASH creator, get his first writing job at 16. The era's comedians understood humor was meant to be shared. Danny would transform Harry's brief anecdotes into elaborate routines while always crediting their source, exemplifying comedy's community-honoring nature. For many comedians, humor develops as a response to feeling different or excluded, transforming perceived weaknesses into comedic strengths. Jon Stewart attributes his comedy to being the only Jew in the neighborhood in 1970s suburban America. Being small and Jewish developed his wit as a survival mechanism, teaching him to distinguish between humor that generates laughs versus getting your ass kicked. Tina Fey decided to try being funny after realizing some girls are going to be very pretty, and then the rest of us have to figure out what our coping mechanism is going to be. She developed a subtle style, muttering clever comments to friends rather than becoming a loud class clown. Kathy Griffin's self-deprecating comedy emerged as protection against bullies, influenced by her Irish Catholic upbringing where parents kept children humble. These experiences show how outsider perspectives transform personal insecurities into material that resonates with audiences who share similar feelings of exclusion. Comedians typically trace their comedy origins to family dynamics. Conan O'Brien developed his skills at his Irish Catholic dinner table, competing among six siblings to make his discerning father laugh, discovering comedy was his unique talent. Billy Crystal's Uncle Burns provided formative influence as a magic man who was dangerous and bawdy, equating comedy with art. Who's funnier than Picasso? Everyone has three eyes and six tits. Lily Tomlin found inspiration in her apartment building's eccentric neighbors, imitating these characters from age seven using her mother's sheets as curtains. Danny Thomas inherited his humor from Uncle Tony, who was so funny he was banned from family funerals. Danny's dramatic flair earned him the nickname Orson, and his humor extended to parenting, greeting Marlo's date with a shotgun after curfew or blasting John Philip Sousa marches to disrupt romantic moments. The path to comedy success rarely runs smooth. Joan Rivers pursued comedy not because she knew she was funny, but because she had no choice. It was her addiction. Despite family discouragement, she persisted through countless rejections. Joan explains that comedy stems from anger. Comedy comes out of "I'll show you," and describes performing as being a lion tamer who must command the audience. Growing up as Miss Independence, Marlo was determined to succeed without her father's help, despite his warnings about the industry's difficulty for women. When a producer suggested she marry instead, she refused her father's assistance thereafter. Danny eventually confronted her, suggesting she give up acting since lightning rarely strikes twice in one family. Furious, she declared, "Not only am I going to make it, but someday you and your partner are going to want to hire me and you won't be able to fucking afford me." Years later, Dani admitted her sister would never succeed because she wasn't angry like you were. When offered the national touring company of Barefoot in the Park, Marlo refused endless comparisons to her father. Instead, she called Mike Nichols directly to audition for the London production, where, away from her father's shadow, she finally stood on her own merits. Comedy has often served as a powerful vehicle for challenging social norms. When ABC's producer Edgar Sherrick offered Marlo typical female roles, she countered, "Did you ever think about doing a show where the girl is the someone?" Despite network claims that audiences wouldn't accept shows about independent young women living alone, That Girl won its time slot on premiere night, proving millions of women saw their aspirations reflected in the character. The impact transcended entertainment. Marlo received desperate letters from women seeking guidance about domestic violence and workplace discrimination. Later, while reading to her niece, she discovered gender stereotyping in children's literature, books with passive princesses, boys who never cried, and rigid gender roles. This inspired Free to Be You and Me, featuring diverse talents like Harry Belafonte, football player Rosie Grier singing It's All Right to Cry, and a young Michael Jackson. The project evolved from an album into a multimedia phenomenon with a best-selling book and Emmy-winning TV special, demonstrating audiences were ready for content challenging traditional gender roles. Perhaps the most profound lesson from growing up with comedy is understanding humor's healing power. After Danny Thomas's death, the family gathered at Hillcrest Country Club. When George Burns approached Danny's widow and declared, "Hey, Rosie, I hear you're single again," the family froze. But Marlo's mother, who hadn't genuinely smiled in weeks, roared with laughter, showing how humor could pierce through grief's heaviest moments. When Elaine May and Marlo became close friends, she provided perfect comfort when Danny died by avoiding platitudes. While others awkwardly said, "He's in a better place," Elaine simply acknowledged, "This is terrible, and it's going to be terrible for a while," then shared funny stories about Danny, making Marlo laugh through tears. St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, Danny's greatest legacy, was built on laughter, with initial funds raised through comedy benefits. When Marlo reluctantly visited after his death, she discovered children celebrating an off-chemo party, with kids in wheelchairs telling jokes to nurses. She understood then that humor wasn't just entertainment, but medicine for the soul. Not an escape from pain, but a way to bear it together through shared laughter.